Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Swim podcast.
All right, how's it going? Welcome to Someone Who Isn't Me, episode number 25. My guest on Swim this time is musician, songwriter and artist Mike Shinoda. And aside from being the driving force behind Linkin Park and Fort Minor, he recently put out his awesome debut solo album, Post Traumatic, which is incredible. You should definitely check it out. It's out now on Warner's. It's a great work and it's firmly rooted in hip-hop. And there's a real pop sensibility running through it as well. And there's some amazing guests like Chino Marino and Black Bear and Grandson and K-Flay, etc. But the theme that runs through the record, or I think, to be more honest, the theme that appears to run through the record for any listener that is going to be viewing it through the lens of the passing of Chester Bennington, his bandmate and friend. It feels like it hangs quite heavy on the album, and it sounds like there's things in there where he's struggling and coming to terms with the passing of his friend. Maybe that is, as I said, just the way that anyone is going to view it. And we kind of discussed that within the podcast. There was a little bit less time than we normally spend to do these sort of things, because he had quite a full promo schedule. So it's a little shorter than they normally are. But I did catch up with him a bit later on in the day as well, and we recorded a bit more. So there is a definite change in the audio quality. You will hear that. I have tried to fit it in within context of the conversation that we were having so that it keeps its flow. But if the change in audio quality is a little off-putting and it feels like it jumps, then I apologize. Just be a little bit kind with it. Also, with that in mind, obviously I've met Mike and Chester a bunch of times, and I found talking about some of this quite tough with him. It's something that he has obviously come to terms with, and he can talk quite freely about it, but I didn't want to appear to be insensitive. So again, be caring when you listen and don't judge me too hard. Anyways, all this aside, I hope you enjoy. I think it's a great conversation. Mike's an amazing artist, both visual and as a musician and songwriter. So check it out, Mike Shinoda.
I do. You're very color coordinated today. You're even color coordinated with your microphone.
Huh? See? And I'm glad that you noticed.
Do you always do that?
No.
Is that a thing?
Oh,
now?
Well, no.
You've gotten very fancy, you know.
In my old age. You can say it. It's fine.
It's just like, you know, he's showing up color coordinated with his microphones and his shirt. And this,
right.
And this little
number. Little neckerchief. Right. I have notes, but I probably won't refer to them. And then afterwards go, I was meant to ask you about this.
You can check your notes if you like.
If this feels a little boring and standard, I apologize, but you also know the score as you've got a new record out and it will be.
I was just saying to somebody, it's my job.
Yeah.
I got to tell the story.
Yeah. We should start with it being your first record as a solo artist. Mm. And we'll get into the whole impetus for that in a moment. But I was curious first and foremost, because this is mainly about creativity.
Yeah.
Or that's something that often gets focused on. It's mainly the more sort of creativity and the slightly more, I don't want to say mystical, but say spiritual elements within making art.
Yeah.
I like to talk about in this.
Great.
So I wanted to know about the creative process with this as your mindset is stepping out as a as a solo artist, because for me it's like, as I said, situation and impetus for that aside, when somebody steps out of a band environment and makes a solo record, that there are, that people always say like tentative steps as a solo artist, but that but these aren't, these are like fully bold strides, and I feel that it's I wondered about the mindset for the creative process for that.
Well, I was thinking about that, like, I think when I was doing it, I had less awareness of what I was doing. So, you know, having some space between making the record and now, I was thinking recently that, you know, isn't it a thing that so many artists make really great stuff early on? Can you think about that? Like,
yeah.
Like, think about, like, the first System of a Down record, or the first Rage record, or the first, like, I feel like Public Enemy did, like, on their second record, it was like, wow, holy shit. and yeah, part of that to me is, you at a certain point you begin to know too much about how to make a record, and there's the pressures of, like, you know, keeping up with what your legacy is and all that stuff, which I feel like I haven't really been super competitive with myself in terms of, like, it's not a commercial thing. Like, with this conversation, everything, let's just say, unless I say otherwise, we're talking about the creative effort, not like the commerce. Because that's not, I don't focus on that a ton anyway when I'm making a record. Like, the commerce of it comes later. When I'm making the record is about the point, the art of it, the story or like conceptual through line. And that's been the way since the beginning.
Do you feel like there are points though where career, I don't want to say commerce, because that would make it sound not dirty, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, it's always about
your career comes into things, and it does tip the balance occasionally.
Well, it just makes you aware of things. Like, you would never, like, as an 18-year-old who's never set foot in a any kind of, like, music industry office, right? You would never be thinking to yourself, like, sitting in your parents' house on your laptop, oh, I really should change the snare sound because it's it's a little passé.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that. Like, you're just making stuff and, like, figuring your way out. You're figuring your way through it instinctively. And it's just based on what are you listening to. The other thing is, like, you've only listened to music for so many years at that point. You know, as you get to be 30 and beyond, you've, like, listened to a lot of fucking music.
And your taste widen, hopefully.
Hopefully. My taste is, like, all over the place. For me, in making Post Dramatic, I was hyper focused on the lyrical content. That was number one.
Yeah.
And then the chords and melodies were second to that. That was the close second. And the tracks were very, like, the skins that would give it an indication of, like, genre, that was all almost like peripheral. I wasn't thinking, like, and a lot of people ask me about, like, the stylistic choices on the record in terms of sounds and samples and keyboards and drum machines and blah, blah, blah. And it, honestly, as I was making it, that was not a primary focus. It was just intuitive. And I felt, and I didn't, I probably didn't use as many things as I normally would. I made a couple of songs, they started as demos in my phone.
Yeah.
Can, like, literally play you the, if you want, I can play it for you. And you can tell the song's there. And I made a thing in my phone. I went, that's cool. And I looped it and I started, like, singing or rapping over that. And then I focused just on what I had to say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got a lot to say. And I think that it seems like hip hop is your first love as well, as far as music goes. Yeah. And it's such a lyrical art form that's going to take precedence. And I think as well that, with the subject matter of the album. See, this is the thing for me, like, when I first listened to it, It's interesting when you tweeted something recently and you about a concert and somebody had reviewed it or said that it was a tribute or that you didn't want everything to be sad and I replied to you that I think everything is going to be viewed through a lens for a certain time, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, and it's subjective.
Yeah.
Right. So for him, it was that way.
Yeah.
And for other people, it's not.
Yeah.
And they're all watching the same show.
Yeah, of course. But it's like when I came out to the show at the Hollywood Bowl, mm-hmm. and I came back and spoke to you all afterwards, and you were all.
What was that like? I don't even remember. I remember speaking. I remember speaking to you, but I know that we were all. It was an out of body experience at that point.
Yeah, it
like
was
we
for were, me as well.
We didn't even know where we were.
That's the thing. Yeah. It did feel like I was kind of watching it happen, and now you say that it's funny because it must have been for you, and it was like these disembodied people all came together and had a conversation that was very
so weird,
surreal.
Yeah,
it was. It was a surreal experience for me, and it was a beautiful one. But it was a tough one as well.
Yeah.
But it felt really celebratory. But yeah. I think people are going to view things through that lens, and I think that what I perceive to be a narrative of the record touches on those things. But then there's points like About You is the perfect kind of counter to that, I think.
Yeah, that's where it starts to become. That's where I started to like become aware of it.
Yeah,
and it was almost the song I could have written would have been one that was more sarcastic.
Hmm.
I didn't.
Yeah,
that's not what I felt like. Like this track was everything just kind of came together in this song that was a little bit more, a little darker, but. There was a, you know, in that moment I was realizing that people, we can talk about it in terms of life, not just music, like people would see me at like my kid's school event or like just see me at a restaurant or something and start to put their own narrative on me.
Yeah.
Like I could be having any kind of day imaginable, but to them everything was through the lens of like super sad and all this shit. And sometimes it was like, but chances were I wasn't going to be out and about in a restaurant if that was the case. I mean, unless I was sitting in the restaurant having a perfectly good time and then one of our songs came on, I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, that would happen.
Hmm. Did that happen a lot or just once or twice?
In the beginning, a lot. Oh my God. Because everybody was playing the songs. Like everybody, there was all tribute. Everything was like, you go into the shopping mall and they're playing our songs in a bunch of the stores. It's like, you know, so I didn't go. I just didn't go. On the new record, you know, there's a few different moments where I go, oh, I'm so glad that those words came to me. Like, I don't know where they came from. Like, when you write some, for me, when I write certain lines, and it's usually when I feel that about a line I've written, it's the same line that other people ask me about. Like, it's not just me that goes, that was a good one. Like, that was something, there's something special about that line. So that's a thing, you know, it's, you just feel, because what it is when you write a line like that, where like, so for example, a lot of people are asking me about, they point out in my new stuff, there's a part where I talk about being at a 6-year-old birthday and people are asking me like, are you okay? And whatever.
Yeah. And hold it
together. And my what I want to say is like, you're totally fucking up my vibe because like we're at a party, a kid's birthday party. Like, why bring this up now? And just that is just a very real for anybody who's gone through, you know, I have a friend who was engaged to be married and had like engagement party and everything, and like everything was set to have a wedding, and then it fell apart, and all of a sudden he had to like literally uninvite a list of guests and tell them all that they're not getting married. And it wasn't because anything, nobody like cheated on each other or whatever. It was just like, no, we're just not getting married anymore. And everyone started to know, and he had to keep answering the questions over. It's like as if it wasn't hard enough.
Yeah.
You know, he had to just keep answering it. It's stuff like that where you just go, that's a very, like when that happens to you for whatever.
Are you reason, able to see that, yeah.
And I by the way, I'm very, and I don't say that. I would never like condemn any of my friends or acquaintances for being nervous and having just bad timing with something like that. Like I had a friend who is actually a comedian. And she said we were talking about something, complaining about something. I don't remember even what it was. And she goes, she's like, oh, you know, I'd said I was dealing with this thing, like, and it was just such a pain in the butt. And she's like, oh man, I don't even know how you deal with that. I just kill myself. And she looked at me, and her face went white, and I started laughing hysterically. And she's like, oh my God, I'm a fucking horrible person. I am the worst person. I'm like, her response was, I'm so glad you're the first person to have made that mistake with me, like, in this period of time.
Yeah.
Like, she was the first person to say those words the way everybody always says them. And I was like, you're the first person to make that mistake, and it couldn't have been a better person. Because she's hilarious. This person's like, that's her job. Like, she's like a really funny person, and we're good friends. So you just get through it. You know, you just... It's messy business. It's always messy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But then making art is the perfect way of working through those things, right?
Yeah.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I wanted to know as well, firstly, that that I know that you kind of threw yourself into painting as well as writing songs.
Yeah.
What came first in that process? Did you start painting? Because I really struggle with doing both simultaneously.
Yeah.
Like, I have so much focus. I think that's the problem.
I like the variety. I mean, I think I painted first.
Yeah.
Because painting is a little more separate from the band.
Yeah.
To me, like in my mind. So I was probably painting and drawing right away after Chester passed. And then, you know...
Did it become a body of work that you were making?
I mean, I did 10 pieces. Like the biggest one is probably, I don't remember. I want to say like 4 or 5 feet.
Wow.
By like 3 or 4 feet. Could be 3 by 4. Could be 5 by 4.
I can't even comprehend working on that scale.
Honestly, the ones that I did in the earliest days were just abstractions. They were. Texture and color.
Yeah.
The album cover is one.
Yeah.
And so if you take my signature off the album cover, that just the splotches of paint is it. And they probably, you know, it's probably like 5 or 6 layers thick. Like, it's pretty thick on the actual canvas. I want to actually show them in person. Like, I want fans and I want people to be able to see them, because there's a texture and you can see the hand, you know?
Yeah,
on these pieces.
I think the palette's amazing as well, particularly on the front cover one.
Cool. That's actually affected by the darkness of the room that I shot the picture in. The painting itself is brighter than that and less yellow.
Huh.
And the room that I was painting in was a little bit like dark, just a little darker.
Hmm.
And I shot that picture of it while I was working on it to like just see how it reproduced, and it was yellowed nicely. And then we did a separate, I didn't paint on it much after that. I may have touched it a couple times, but not really, didn't change it. And then I took it outside and got like a nice bright picture of it. So the picture in the art book of the album, which is like the limited edition version of the album, it has pictures of that book has pictures of all the pieces that I did, all 10 or whatever, and they're all, you know, nice and bright professional pictures of the pieces. And that picture is, you can tell that the whites are whiter.
What point do you walk away from things?
Well, on these, I mean, I've been dealing with like, when is something finished?
Yeah,
I've been dealing with that forever, like my whole life. You know,
but that's the creative process, isn't
it? Yeah. And I think I made, you know, everybody who works on, who makes something creative, like you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You always, you've dealt with, for as long as you've been doing it, you've been dealing with the question of when is it done.
Yeah.
And I've had some really great paintings that I fucked up.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I kept going, and I just added a couple things, and I went, oh, that's not quite right. And then I tried to do things to fix the things that I added and made it even worse.
Hmm. Do you think songwriting is a help in that sense? Because with songwriting, obviously you can pare stuff back, but you also get to a point when you have a maturity with songwriting, you know, you instinctively know that this does everything it needs to do,
right,
in this minimal quality. And can you then apply that into other art forms?
Well, songwriting's easier than, on the specific subject, you know, songwriting's easier than painting, because you can undo and you can create options. Like, digital painting is nice because you've got the same ability, right? Yeah. But that's the one of the difficulties in physically putting paint on a canvas or whatever, that, you know, once you screw it up, it's there. Like, you're gonna have to
live with it. Yeah.
Or just, it's gonna take a lot of work and magic to get back a step. And maybe you make it even better. I don't know. Whatever. And sometimes, actually, I believe, for me, more often than the scenario we were just talking about, more often I make a little mistake, sometimes a big mistake, and look at it and go like, oh, that's nice. Like, what's that?
Yeah.
People often ask me, like, do I have a favorite Linkin Park album that we've done? And you, truth is that usually my brain goes to 1,000 Suns. Hmm. And that's because that album was just packed with happy accidents. Like, and they weren't, it wasn't like, oh, I didn't know what I'm doing, and all of a sudden I made a cool thing. It was, I need to make this song more interesting. Let's just start randomly plugging things in and creating weird sounds. And, you know, once a keyboard has gone through 5 guitar pedals and a cabinet out in a room with a microphone that's not meant for it, that is across the room, you turn that microphone on, you go, wow, I don't touch anything, just hit record, you know?
Yeah.
That's where your ears tell you it's right and you've created the thing. But you just, the path to getting there was filled with a bunch of chance.
Yeah. I think there's, I don't know if this is me interpreting it that way, but I feel like this record has lots of that. Like, a place to start where it starts with the like swathes of silence, like just that hiss, and then where they're cut into these clean sections.
Mm-hmm. Those were the room mics in the studio during One More Light.
Oh, wow.
The room mic's on and just turned way up. So that's that hiss is just the lack of sound, you know. And then on that, like a sidechain compressor. So every time the 808, if I just fed the 808 into the compressor, then it wouldn't have compressed right. Yeah. So I fed a MIDI note into the compressor, which decayed, which I could control the decay.
Yeah.
And that was on the hiss. So each time the 808 hits, the hiss kind of sucks in and then comes back.
Yeah, there's loads of elements like that and textures that I think are fantastic. Because aside from the lyrical content of this record, it's just impeccable, like sonically.
Oh, thank you.
You've smashed it. Like,
thanks, man.
There's little things for me, like as kind of like a musical nerd,
Like the second verse in A Place to Start, that vocal is just...
Yeah.
Things like that, I think, I mean, obviously, that we know this, they accentuate everything that is being told within a song, but yeah, it's a brilliant work, man.
Thanks. Well, it's you know, on things like that, I'm not one... Like, I've got chains of, like, for example, on vocals, like, there are chains of plugins that I like, that I know I kind of use, and I go and I, you know, mix and match them, but there's, you know, it's not an infinite, I'm not just, like, grabbing any plugin I see and going, what does that sound like? I know what a lot of these plugins sound like, so I tend to use this a smaller batch in different combinations, and having... But on this record, one thing that I did is when I knew that I had the vocal that I wanted, like the words were the right words, the performance was the right performance, I did go back in later and really think about the aesthetic of how the words and the track played together. And there's a lot of little moments of where experimentation in terms of the like effects on the vocals and the effects on sounds and stuff. It's a very like headphone record, you know?
Yeah.
Like
for
it's
real.
It's wide and there's a lot of like action in the three-dimensional.
There's
space.
A lot to take in. Like sonically and lyrically and emotionally.
Too much.
No. I don't think so. It's a tough listen at times.
Yeah. No, the Manny who mixed the first he mixed most of the record. When he was mixing the first three songs, he was playing them back for me, and our process is that like I'll send him I mix as I go, so I send him something that sounds already pretty good, and he gets it, and then he spends some time with it sweetening it, and then like A-B-ing between my mix and his mix to make sure if there's anything about mine that he liked, he keeps it, and if not, then he's hopefully improved on it. And then I'll come, he does that for like a day, and then I'll come in with him for a day and listen to his version. And if it's, you know, better, then we just work from that, and I'll change things to taste. And if it's not better, then sometimes I'll send him back to the drawing board and have him tell him specifically to do certain things, and then we'll work on it. And on this record, like there were moments on the first three tracks when we were doing the process, we were doing like working on it, and I hear his mix and I'd go, yeah, his mix is great, but like I'm like, what are you doing to the vocal? Because I feel like I'm missing a lot of words now. That, and the words are important. I want to hear them more. And he was like, you know, starting to fix that. And he's like, you know what was happening? The words make me uncomfortable. He's like, I wasn't even. He's like, consciously, I wasn't thinking that, but subconsciously, like when I turn them up, I have to face what you're saying.
Yeah.
And so I was in, like, my instinct was to turn them down and to like put effects on them.
Wow.
I was like, okay. Like,
that's
now we know. And let's not do that. Like, I know it's kind of rough to hear these words, but the words are what it's all about. So we can't miss any words.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'd even go through sometimes and like on certain words where it was a little less audible or a little less, like you couldn't quite tell what the word was. Like we
need to bring
spot,
them out.
We'd spot check even words that were in the track.
Wow.
That's not totally unusual for me.
No, it's not.
Like, we do that.
Yeah,
that
I think that's... I think within the subject matter, that's wild.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. Well, it's harder. I think harder for him than me. I was living with the songs. Like, he was, you know...
Yeah, because you'd made the songs and that was your... That was the process of working through it.
Yeah. When Chester passed away, and what happens often when somebody passes away is people, you know, when they're not talking about the heavy stuff, they're kind of like playfully throwing around ghost stories. It's a weird phenomenon. And it's because some people, like, you know, actually firmly believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
And in other parts, it's just great stories, you know?
How do you sit on that?
So I don't sit on one side or the other. I just love hearing the stories and I'm neither a believer nor non-believer. I'm just kind of in the middle. And I've heard amazing stories that are 100% convincing.
Yeah.
They sound so, so amazing. you know, like there's, you know, talking to somebody, talking to a medium, and the medium tells them that you are looking for something, aren't you? You're looking for this specific item. It looks like this. Is that correct? And they go, oh my God, yeah. Mm. And they said, you've looked for it for weeks and you can't find it. And they said, that's right. And they say, it is in this closet in a pair of pants hanging out of the pocket, just like that. Mm. And they go in there and it's there. So that type of thing, you hear that story and you're like, wow, that couldn't be more convincing, right?
I could direct you to a book I just finished as well, okay, which is, but that's another thing. We'll get
so the point is, yeah. I heard stories like that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to write a song about, I had this song going and it kind of started to point in that direction. It just seemed like it wanted to be about that. But yeah. I was like, well, how do I write a song about something that I'm not really, that I do and don't believe in, that other people feel a certain way? How do I make it that without it being about Chester? Hmm. How do I do that with it being playful and not sad?
Yeah.
So like it was when I was, yeah. as I was doing it, I was like, this is going to fall apart. Like this song is not going to work. And then I finished it and I went, oh my God, it like actually came together. It has that tone. Like all those things I just said are kind of just in the song. So it's not like, it's not a masterpiece of a song. It's just like, I can't believe I walked that tightrope and got to the end and looked back and went like, huh, I didn't fall off.
Yeah. There's one lyric. There's one lyric in that song in particular that jumped out for me though.
What is that?
Which was the, I've been having dreams that after I'm awake play out in reality the very next day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that, I mean,
so the first line of the song is, she said,
okay.
Yeah.
That's a get out clause.
It is. It yeah. is. But that's the truth. It was yeah. the thing was people were specifically a couple people were telling me these stories and then, and they would like, you know, in that case, my wife had this thing where she had a dream about lavender. And then that day she was walking through our friend's yard to go say hi and whatever. And they have lavender in the front yard. She's like, oh, I just dreamed about this. It's like, smells so good. And her friend was like, well, grab a little bit of it. Like, you know, we've got tons, like take some with you. Mm. And so she said, take a couple, I think she said, take a couple stalks with you. And normally my wife, when you say that, she would take two. But she took four and she like got in the car and put it in the like cup holder and was like, that's weird. Why did I do that? And then drove down to see Chester's wife, Talinda, because they had planned to have lunch or something that day. And in long story short, in the course of the whole thing, another person showed up and as Anna was leaving, she's like, oh, I grabbed this from my friend's house this morning. I don't know why I grabbed it, but there's four of us and there's four pieces. Mm. And she handed it to everybody. And one of the people was sitting there staring at her with a white face. And she's like, why are you looking at me like that? And he's like, because I had a dream that this was going to happen. And I didn't realize it until you just did that. And this is what it said in my dream. It's like a whole thing, right? Mm. So that was one of those moments where she came home and she's like, this just happened. How crazy is that? Mm. You know?
I find those things happen a lot, and the more you accept them, they happen even more.
Okay.
But that sounds very woo-woo and hokey, but...
Hey, my wife says woo-woo. That's her word for it.
There you go.
It's very woo-woo. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. It always happens to somebody else.
Well, does it, though?
No, for me.
Yeah, but maybe... I don't know, man. I find that making art, visual art, or making music is you know, there's a thing there.
Yeah.
There's definitely a thing.
All right, we'll see.
Do you not find that yourself? Do you not find that it's like we were saying earlier about time being an elastic thing?
Oh,
when
yeah.
When you're in the creative process, time changes.
It does. And I do feel sometimes that things I often talk about riding the wave, meaning it's not going with the flow. That's different. Going with the flow is being easy. Yeah. And like somebody says, hey, you know, where do you want to go to lunch? And you're like, I don't care. And they you say, you pick. That's go with the flow. Riding the wave is noticing coincidence, noticing repetitions of ideas or phrases or feelings or whatever. And you go, huh, like that's weird. I feel like I've heard that word four times to like this week or like somebody keeps mentioning that that thing, I should go, like, maybe I should look that up, or maybe I should do, you know, I think I did actually write some of the songs on this record because it was like a theme came up in conversation three times. And I was like, that's not, you know, there's a reason that weird little theme is showing up. I'm just going to write a song about it.
Yeah. You know, have you been with the reaction to the record? Because as you said, you know, this was you working through the song, through it in song. And I think that's what we discussed when I spoke to you after the concert.
Yeah.
It was, for me, I was just like so overwhelmed, and you guys had been working on it and...
Oh yeah. I mean, that's why on the record, on the second song on my album, is I wrote and recorded the first verse the day of that show, and I wrote and recorded the second verse the day after that show. And it is about, you know, the song's called Over Again. Like, it's all about reliving this thing that has happened, you know, every time we rehearsed a song. Like, we had to rehearse that set. It's 3 hours of music. We had to rehearse it for months.
Yeah.
You know, it was like over a month, maybe it was like 6 weeks of rehearsals, like going through those songs and just like smashing ourselves over the head with a hammer and then taking an Advil and smashing ourselves over the head with a hammer again.
Yeah.
It's like, that was like what rehearsal was like.
Yeah, I can imagine. So tough. I think there's a couple of moments on there. The Thank You Genius. You think it'll be a challenge later.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
There are moments when I write something and I go, oh, that's it. Like, that's like the core of what this, either what I'm feeling or what this song is about. And I feel like I was really finding those moments as I was making the record. Like, okay, that line, the fact that it was like, I know that nobody who's opening up the, you know, who's listening to the album and getting started on that, down the path of like, what is this record about? Nobody's thinking about my career. I'm thinking about that. You're not thinking about that. But I'm thinking about it from the context of like, I am an artist who has a body of work, like in a legacy in terms of multiple albums of songs that I've spent thousands of hours, you know, creating and talking about and playing on stage, and maybe millions. I don't know how many hours I got. How many hours are in 15 years? I don't know. And it's all in question.
Yeah.
Right. To in one way or another. So when somebody, you know, walks up to you and says, how's it going? How are you doing? Like, that's a loaded question. They probably don't want to hear the real answer.
Yeah.
Right. So the album was a chance to like give them answers.
I like it when people do realize that and do actually tell you exactly though.
Yeah.
Because it's very real.
I think it feels good to like be aware of that. Like when somebody says, how are you doing? And you can like actually think about it and answer. But it's also kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
Cause then you have to get into it. But I for sure on this, with this album, I've been making a point to be really, straightforward about that. And,
I don't think you can't, you couldn't be.
Because I think it's good, it helps me, like it feels good to do it.
Yeah.
And it also helps the fans and helps people who are going through heavy stuff, like to know that it's me too. Like I'm going through this thing and I'm doing pretty well. Like I feel today is like a good day.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about this stuff and it's not, you know, I don't find it hard to talk about this stuff.
No.
Right now. It's like very natural. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone that's sitting in front of you asking about stuff are the ones that are feeling it. I know I am. In all honesty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a couple that they were like, I had a Japanese journalist cry in the middle of the interview.
Wow.
Like, that's crazy. That's really hard.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you deal with that?
Thankfully, it was print. It wasn't like TV, like on camera. That would be so bad.
Wow.
The more history the band has with somebody, you know, and all that, it's like very natural and human, and that's you know, of
course. Because I think the thing is, it's like those periods of time between, like the periods of time between when I see you are vast.
Yeah.
But they concertina, don't they? Time does that. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about the creative process, that time just, it becomes so elastic.
It is, yeah.
But we could get into that another time. But I think we got to wind this up.
Yeah, I think we have to go.
All right. Thanks, man.
Awesome talking to you as always.
Cool. Thank you for doing that.
For sure. Am I going to see you later?
Yes.
Thank you for checking out episode number 25 of Someone Who Isn't Me. Also, thank you to Mike, obviously, for squeezing this into his schedule, essentially, because, as I said, we were going to be meeting, and we did actually meet up, and we did an interview for Radio 1 for my show, but we kind of squeezed this one in the morning as well, which was really good of him. Make sure you check out the album Post Traumatic. It's awesome. As I said, there's some brilliant guest contributions as well. You can find Mike online. He's Mike Shinoda on Twitter and M_Shinoda on Instagram as well. Follow him on Instagram. It's just like good stuff about his touring, also a lot of his visual art and some of the videos that he's made as well for this record. And I think the approach that he's had to this record is brilliant. It feels very organic, and I like the fact that it's got he's doing everything within it. He's writing the songs, he's performing the songs, he's making the artwork with his friend Frank as well, who's doing all the graphic design. Big ups to him as well, because he's a great designer. He's making the videos himself. I think it's a very true process of dealing with something which is incredibly heavy, and he's excelled in doing it, so fair play to him. All right, next episode will be, who knows? I have got one in the bag, which I've kind of been putting off, but there's a couple of others that I want to get done as well, so we'll just see what happens with it. I know that these are very infrequent. I apologize. As I said many times before, I'd like to think that it might be quality over quantity. That's not casting aspersions on anyone else's podcast, because they seem to manage to do both, but I don't, so sorry about that. But thank you for checking it out. Please leave a nice review on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating, that would be wicked. Spread the love. Tell your friends about it. Check it out next time. Peace.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.